Hello and welcome to PCB Chat, where we talk with experts across the printed circuit design, manufacturing, and electronic supply chain. I'm Mike Buteau, Editor-in-Chief of PCD&F and Circuits Assembly. Today's podcast is sponsored by PCB West Virtual 2020, the annual conference and trade show with more than 125 hours of training on PCB design, fabrication, and assembly, starting September 7th and running through October 12th. Visit PCBWest.com for details. We hear a lot about the graying of the PCB industry. Today's guest might blow that concept right out of the water. He is Andrew Dia, a process engineer. Andrew has been working in the industry full-time for about 6 years. He has a bachelor's and master's degree in engineering and manufacturing technology from RIT and also did work co-ops with Anaren and Bose. In 2013, while working on his master's, Andrew won the Charles Hutchins Award, which is co-sponsored by SMTA and Circuits Assembly, for research he was conducting on package-on-package technology. Welcome to PCB Chat, Andrew.
Good afternoon, Mike. Thank you for having me.
So I know you've had some background now in electronics, not a really long career yet, and I think that you're right about to do a job change. So let's just ask, you know, how are things going, and have you been running in your experience as a process engineer to date, have you been running SMT lines or are you doing higher level type of operations?
I've luckily been able to have a unique combination of experiences where I've been able to work as a design for manufacturer engineer, as well as a process engineer. And that's really allowed me to be able to see insights on the design side, as well as the manufacturing side. More lately, I've been working more as the process engineering side, where I've been able to do work on SMT lines as well as through-hole lines and unit assembly lines, kind of working from bare board to box build manufacturing, which has really given me a good depth of experience.
So in the stops that you've had so far, and I don't want to, you know, diminish, you know, we're in a very transition type of environment right now, I think, for a lot of people. But in the jobs you've held so far, is there approach to DFM to bring in all the manufacturing guys up front so that you have this big kickoff meeting with the DFM people, the manufacturing guys, the software guys, the CAD designer, the SI people, the hardware guys? Is everybody in the room up front, or is it still sort of a distributed thing where the design gets passed down the road and all the manufacturing rules really aren't hard-coded at the beginning?
In my short experience, I've seen a little bit of both, more leaning on kind of the toss over the fence mentality. In some experiences, we've had design for manufacturer guidelines that were like textbooks. In other experiences, we've had design for manufacturing guidelines that were, you know, a couple pages on a Word document. I tend to see more of the latter side, where after, you know, the engineers are ready to buy the circuit board, the layout's already complete, and then that's when manufacturing takes over. I'd like to hope that we're moving towards kind of what you explained first, where, you know, when it's a napkin drawing, manufacturing is getting involved and starting to think about all the ways where improvements can be made beforehand instead of struggling with them when they're on the circuit board line.
You've specified sort of a preference towards, you know, a more elaborate and comprehensive kickoff session. What types of products have you worked on to date? And have you seen any kind of correlation between the type of approach that they took to DFM and what happened at the end of the line?
So I've been able to work in the oil and gas industry, kind of harsh environment, high humidity, high temperature products, as well as the aviation environment. Also see some harsh environments, but as well some more harsher temperatures depending on where you're storing your plane. In both cases, there have definitely been some downfalls in terms of DFM when it comes later in the game. I tend to see a lot of quality mix-ups, quality issues when the circuit boards hit the line, which, you know, ends up eating us cost in either engineering time, investigation time, or rework time. In times I've seen DFM work really successfully, we've ended up increasing quality and first pass yield, as well as saving us time on the line because we're able to focus on more optimizing and improving the processes versus retroactively fixing processes to correct design issues. And that's not to blame the design engineers, but, you know, when the feedback isn't taken in or ignored, we tend to see more issues and hassle when we're actually running the process.
Yeah, I do talk to plenty of design engineers, and it's still surprising to me how many of them have never walked through a manufacturing facility.
Yeah, one of my biggest efforts when running prototypes in my most recent job was to actually bring the design engineer to do the first pass inspection of a circuit board. This allowed them to kind of see the line, and I could kind of explain to them step by step exactly what we were seeing from some of their choices in design. Especially when they're kind of seeing that board at pre-reflow, you can start to show them exactly what defects will start to be created based on some of their choices.
So I'm going to switch gears for a moment, and let's talk a little bit about your college experience and the type of research that you did when you were working on your master's at RIT. What made packaging an area that you wanted to explore, and to what degree have you then been able to leverage that over the past few years working in industry?
My first experience really seeing any kind of electronics manufacturing and packaging was probably between Anaren and Bose co-ops, where they had some kind of pick place test machines for packaging up components and reels, as well as a prototype line, for building circuit boards. And just kind of watching the automation, the machines, the speed of it just fascinated me. From there, I was able to take some courses in the intro to electronics manufacturing and just kind of build up my knowledge base a bit more. After that, kind of as a transition point between getting my bachelor's degree and deciding to go into the job market or hit grad school. Unfortunately, the job market wasn't super hot when I graduated, so I decided to go to grad school. I was lucky enough to get under the mentorship of Dr. Ram Kumar at RIT, and I was able to work in his Center for Electronics Manufacturing and Assembly there, which really just allowed me to get not only the knowledge and kind of his mentorship being in the industry for 20 plus years, but as well as getting hands-on experience because we had a surface mount prototype lab where we were able to do prototypes for local companies, work with seniors on their design projects, senior projects, as well as, run the labs for the classes that we were doing. And that really helped me set up kind of this good technical background, technical knowledge, as well as being able to have the experiential knowledge in terms of setting up the equipment, troubleshooting the equipment, and being able to work with multidisciplinary teams.
Charles Hutchins was actually a mentor of mine in the early 1990s. And for folks who don't recognize the name, he was an early adopter of SMT back when he was with Texas Instruments. The SMTA created an award after his untimely passing that is designed to provide a grant to engineering students that are working on a master's or a PhD level degree and plan on going into a packaging or engineering field. Let me ask, what has winning the Hutchins Award meant to you?
For me, the Hutchins Award was really kind of the push that got the ball rolling down the hill. After grad school, I could easily, chose as easily to go into any kind of manufacturing at that point. But being able to apply and win that award eventually really just kind of solidified that this was the industry I wanted to be in. It really kind of built up knowing about the Surface Mount Technology Association more, knowing the resources from SMTA, as well as kind of building my network and starting that in the SMTA. It was probably one of the best achievements in my life so far. I honestly, after looking and researching into the grant, I dismissed myself from even winning it, just seeing some of the other papers and research projects that had won it. So I applied based off my mentor and graduate advisor's recommendation. I put in all the effort I could to get my application really strong. But in the back of my head, I was kind of like, there's all these guys from Georgia Tech and University of Maryland, who have been doing this for a couple of years now, and I really don't have a chance. But I can still remember the day when Dr. Scott Anson, who was on the review committee at the time and a former RIT professor, gave me the call, and I just kind of like stood there and my jaw was literally on the floor. And I think for like a minute, I couldn't talk and respond to his questions, and he might have thought the phone call had dropped. But kind of like I said, that phone call, like I said, it's kind of a defining moment in me deciding to go to electronics manufacturing and stick with the SMTA as a strong organization for this industry and continue to kind of pursue the research and technical knowledge that I needed to become a good engineer.
Well, you know, to your point, there's no doubt that it's a competitive process. And there are certain schools, and I think professors at some of these schools that are really oriented toward SMTA and trying to encourage their students towards participation, even as while they're working on their master's or PhDs and not really in industry yet. Another one is Auburn. I know that there's a lot of support for SMTA down there, and students apply to the Hutchins Award from that program. I strongly encourage other universities to look at it. I would love to see the broader range of schools represented. Nothing against the folks who have won, of course. They all are coming from top-notch programs and doing important work. But I think that there's other programs out there that may not even be aware that the Hutchins grant is there. And if they are in the position that I was in, I mean, we're still paying off my wife's PhD loans. So, you know,
I know that
every little bit counts, in my opinion. It's not going to make you rich, but every little bit counts.
Yeah, I 100% agree. I've been fortunate enough now to actually join the review committee for the SMTA. And like you kind of said, we see the same kind of top four, top five schools apply every year. And the research topics are top notch, cutting edge technology, really, you know, pushing the industry forward. But the diversity of schools would be great to see.
And was that the first time you had attended the SMTA International Conference?
Yes. Yeah, that was an amazing experience in Fort Worth, Texas. First time in Texas, you know, first time at an SMTAI. Definitely eye-opening.
What was it about the conference that first struck you?
There's a couple aspects to it. One was the amazing wealth of knowledge in the industry. You know, I was just standing around all these people that, you know, I consider them people that have forgotten more than I've learned. So it's just being able to kind of soak that in and understand, you know, if I want to become a good engineer and a, you know, a great leader in electronics manufacturing industry, these are the people I kind of need to emulate. You know, I mean, you go find their papers, read what kind of research they've been doing, figure out their career paths and how I could potentially follow into that. That, as well as, you know, the trade show just absolutely floored me in terms of just the amount of equipment they brought in, the crowds surrounding all the equipment, watching all the demos, and just being able to talk to, you know, different aspects of the industry and kind of how they all piece together.
This year's SMTI is, like most others, it's going to be virtual. Have you ever given thought to preparing a paper for that event yourself?
This year, I won't be actually preparing a paper. I will be on a panel discussion for kind of how to walk the floor as a newer engineer or a younger engineer, kind of how the interactions work between sales and reps and technical engineers. Because I remember my first time walking the floor, you know, it's definitely nerve-wracking, especially when you don't have any kind of capital to back any discussions up. So as a new engineer, it can definitely be a little bit intimidating, but it's 100% completely worth it to attend, whether it's virtual or in person. And then this year has all the benefits of, you know, the same great show, but you can be on your couch or at your desk or, you know, outside in your garden enjoying a nice lemonade while being able to get soak in all the technical knowledge as well as the virtual expo.
Yeah, I couldn't agree more. I mean, even if you won't necessarily be able to walk away with a keychain or an LED light up ball, I think that you're still going to get a lot out of the virtual experience. Now, Andrew, you're still at the relative beginning of your career. Do you have any specific goals for the next like 10 or 20 or 50 years?
At this point, I'm trying to work my way up to kind of a senior level engineer. At some point, I'd like to be kind of a technical mentor in terms of electronics manufacturing. I kind of see it to like in kind of the traditional career paths we've been set out as, you know, this, you have a technical path and a management track. And I think, you know, it's worked for a long time, but I think there's got to be a way where you can bring both those paths together almost. I don't think you can kind of go into the world, the career or corporate world, you could say, and just kind of pigeon your hole into technical or pigeon your hole into management. I think everyone needs to kind of learn their own management and leadership style, as well as harnessing their technical expertises and figuring out a way you can, let's say, create a team or work with a diverse group of people to be able to hit that common goal. And most of these factories, you know, our common goal is to build the highest quality product, build it at the lowest cost, and meet the design, form, fit, and function design requirements. So what can we do as engineers to be able to harness the technical expertise as well as our leadership and management skills to get that end goal? Other than that, I kind of have aspirations to continue working alongside with the SMTA. Like I've said, that I've enjoyed being in that network, experiencing the technical knowledge that they put out on a monthly basis. I'm hoping, you know, wherever I end up next, I'm able to join the local chapter and have a positive impact and keep going to the national shows and the chapter expos, because those have been super beneficial to my career and to my growth as an engineer.
Well, that all sounds great. And I'm sure that SMTA will be happy to know that you're going to continue on as part of the organization. I think that, you know, having some of the younger engineers involved in the association is a big, big asset. That brings us to a close to today's episode. I want to thank my guest, Andrew Dia.
Thank you, Mike.
And folks that have interest in learning more about SMTAI and maybe hearing what Andrew has to say, they can visit the website at smta.org. And I'd also like to thank the sponsor of today's podcast, PCB West, another virtual conference that's taking place this month. You can find out more about PCB West at pcbwest.com. For PCB Chat, this is Mike Buto. Have a nice day.